Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
A fifth win on the spin and 7 points clear again at the top of the championship table. The sun was certainly shining on Norwich City this weekend with a 2-0 win at Wickham. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pinkin.com Norwich City podcast. I'm Dave Freezy. You can also hear us on Future Radio 107.8 FM. Joined by Connor Southwell and City fan Sean Gallier-Pace to look back on that win at Adams Park and a few other bits and pieces of news which we'll come on to. But Connor, if I come to you first, it was a lovely weekend. I wasn't expecting to be I could have done with some suntan lotion and a cap or something. I considered giving Tim Krull a shout, see if he had a spare one, because I shaved my head recently and I've almost got a little bit of an early spring tan now.
Well, I was going to say, I saw your picture on Twitter and there was a nice shine coming off, which is nice. It was a really lovely day, wasn't it? All round, in terms of weather, in terms of result, in terms of probably second half performance more than anything. And I think, like you say, probably a deserved win in the end, despite Wickham maybe feeling a little bit aggrieved that they probably should have had a penalty when Tim Krull fouled Ibora. So all in all, a good day. Probably one you'd file as a professional performance, not necessarily Norwich at their slick, free-flowing best, but still created a number of quality opportunities. I think, obviously, beyond the goals, I think about that chance that Emi Buendia had in the second half. Onel Hernandez had a couple as well. So I think you may be reflecting on it, saying it probably could have been more convincing, but I think 2-0 was probably a fair reflection overall of the game and how it transpired. But ultimately, as I'm sure we'll get into, the most important thing is the win and the context that gave to the league table, which certainly looks healthier for Norwich City now than perhaps it did at the start of the weekend.
Particularly with the big game we've got coming up on Wednesday night, which we'll soon come on to. Sean, we will come into the game in a bit more depth shortly, but how are you finding life, this frustrating life of following Norwich City from afar? Have you found sort of any little tips or ways of enjoying it a little bit more from a distance?
It's difficult. You obviously can't have the pre-match routine, which for me is a hot dog at the stand outside Morrison's. The sausage roll, the big jumbo sausage roll from Morrison's as well. So, I have a particular routine that I have that involves a lot of food. I just have to have it homemade and do a frozen pizza instead. But no, it's difficult. It's hard because you're just shouting at the TV, sort of saying all the things that you wish you could shout at the players. And clearly they can't hear you. So it's been challenging, obviously, with, the results, how they've been. It's been quite an easy ride. You can just sit back and have a couple of beers and not have to worry too much. But it's been a challenge to sort of watch. And I didn't go to any of the pilot events either that we had, obviously, at the very start of the season. So, it's been frustrating not to be able to watch players like Ollie Skip. I've not seen him in the flesh play. Mm. And probably won't get the chance to do all season. So I think it's been a bit of a challenge. It's been nice in another aspect that you're able to view things a second time or a third time because of the replays by not going to the matches. But we've been quite lucky, I guess, with the coverage that we've been able to watch the matches as they unfold on TV. We're not in sort of League One and League Two where, okay, you've got iFollow, but they're on Sky now, aren't they? So we've been quite fortunate that those matches have been on. But, it's obviously not the same as being there in the flesh.
Absolutely. Actually, that's an interesting point that I've certainly noticed that on social media. But for example, at Wickham yesterday, me and Paddy are there and they have a very low press box. And so in the sort of far right corner, we're blocked by the dugouts. We can't even see what's going on in one corner of the pitch. And we're actually at the stadium. And you've got all the Norwich fans at home who have probably got better views than us and have got access to instant replays. We didn't even have TVs to see any replays. So it's weird. We're obviously very fortunate to be there. But in a lot of ways, when a big incident happens, fans who are following it from a distance end up getting a sort of better look at it than we do. So,
well, that's with the Tim Crow incident. Yes, I didn't see it happen in real time. And it wasn't until I saw the replay, I was like, actually, that is a penalty, you know. With VAR, that would have been given, which is quite nice that we've sort of found ourselves without that this season. Yeah. But, you know, I didn't see it in real time. And then it's only when you look at it back and it's like, oh, yeah, we got away with one there.
Yeah. Well, besides the fact that yesterday we actually had to, you know, shield our eyes from the sun the whole game. I mean, Connor, you'll remember the Bournemouth game, I think, in October. Mm-hmm. We had exactly the same. They usually put press boxes on the side of the stadium that doesn't have the sun shining on them. But that was far from ideal. Anyway, before we press on, we've got a couple of bits of news that we should get through and some sad news. Glenn Roeder, former Norwich City boss, of course, between October 2007 and January 2009, passed away Sunday. That news broke after the Wickham game. Lots of warm tributes throughout the game from him because although things didn't go well for him at Norwich, he, you know, had a big impact at other clubs, Newcastle, West Ham, Watford and QPR as a player as well. And was an England coach under Glenn Hoddle. So a very well-renowned person in football. We probably don't need to get into, you know, all of his Norwich reign. We all know that it ended on a pretty sour note and there were bad moments along the way. But as so many people have kindly pointed out, really, because I haven't seen anybody make any snarky, horrible comments, thankfully. It's all been very respectful of a man who has sadly passed away at the age of 65. He had his battles against a brain tumour while he was West Ham manager, of course, and that is what has finally been the issue for him, unfortunately. So thankfully, everybody's kept it nice and respectful, and the nice point that everyone's focused on is that he is the man that brought Wes Houlihan to the club. So just a few comments from former City players that I wanted to read out, actually, which I thought would just sort of round it off nicely. A more in-depth discussion about Glenn's time at the club is probably for another day. But Dion Dublin, he won the Player of the Season award in at the end of Roeder's first season, 2007-2008, when they went on a 13-game unbeaten run to survive because they were bottom and 4 points adrift when he came in as Peter Grant's successor. Dion said on Instagram, rest in peace, Glenn. Thank you very much for everything you did for me. Brian Gunn on Twitter, who was made goalkeeper coach by Roeder and then became head of recruitment in the summer. So very sad news about Glenn. Thoughts and prayers are with his wife, Faith, and Holly, Will, and Joe. Rest in peace, Glenn. Tim Krul, of course, Norwich number one. He played for Roeder at Newcastle. So he tweeted, so sad to hear the news that Glenn Roeder passed away. The man who believed in me and who gave me my Newcastle debut. Rest in peace. And finally, for now, Ewan Roberts, who played under Glenn at Watford, I believe it was. Such sad news that Glenn Roeder sadly passed away, played with Glenn at Watford when he was coming towards the end of his career. He was great with us young lads, just starting off on our journey. Hi all, it's Dave here. I just felt after we'd finished recording the pod that I did want to reflect a little bit more on Glenn Roeder's time with the club. So I've had a catch up with our head of sport, Chris Lakey, who was covering Norwich during Glenn's time at the club. You can hear that at the end of this week's pod if you just want to reflect a bit more on Glenn's time, which is between 2007 and 2009, following that sad news on Sunday. But for now, it's on with the show. Right, to news which I suppose has been welcomed in some ways by Norwich fans, but Paul Lambert is gone. It's finally over, isn't it, Connor? Although perhaps you could look at it in the other way, and that Agent Lambert is no more.
No, he's been intercepted, hasn't he? That's the negative point. I saw a video from our colleagues who work on the East Anglian Daily Times, and it was a clip of the warm up on Saturday when they beat Doncaster 2-1, and the players are kind of warming up in different sections of the pitch at Portman Road, and he has stood essentially in the D with, I think it's another member of staff, literally just playing the crossbar challenge in the warm up, and that's a little bit strange if you think about it. But given the context that we learnt last night in terms of his payoff being agreed before that game, and perhaps he knew that was going to be his last game, I think maybe you kind of understand it a little bit more. But it's really difficult to see where he goes from here in all seriousness, because what little, well, it was about a decade ago, wasn't it? We were talking about his success at Norwich City, and that's the last time really that success has been associated with one of his sides. And now he finds himself back in the football wilderness, underperformed at a League One club. So it's very difficult to plot his next move or his next step, to be completely honest. And it's going to be difficult, but equally, it was a change, I think, if you asked Ipswich fans, that probably needed to happen, given everything that's gone wrong on the pitch. And it looks like there's going to be plenty of change off it, maybe in the next few weeks as well. So this looks the start of it. Paul Cook, if that's the man that's going to go in, it looks like he probably is. I think that's probably a fairly shrewd appointment, to be completely honest, for where they find themselves and the level they're at. But yeah, Paul Lambert's legacy at Norwich City and how it's going to be remembered, I think in 10 years, 5 years down the line, I think he's going to be very interesting to see.
Yeah, he got Norwich promoted twice and Ipswich relegated once. So he's very much earned his place.
Still in the statue.
very much earned his place in the Hall of Fame. But Sean, if you take the local rivalry out of it, the whole sort of animosity around Lambert, they've just won two on spin. They're four unbeaten. Mm. They're 2 points outside the playoffs. If you forget Lambert and just look at it as a club's ownership making the change to try and get a bounce to make sure they're in the promotion mix, there's still every chance that Ipswich get back into or will have a chance of getting back into the Championship this season.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's from the outside looking in, it's a very harsh decision based on the last two games. But I guess if you take it into context of the last 2.5 years or however long he's been there, you know, it was a crazy decision in like a year ago or whenever it was to order him to give him that long contract. And fans, because I've got two brothers that support Ipswich, so I'm quite connected in that space. Which obviously leads to a bit of rivalry from our side. But you know, they've been saying for ever since he took them down the first time, look, this just time for a change. But you can see from the, you know, the last two, why not keep him until the end of the season? If he fails again, you know, then there's the time to get rid of him. But I think obviously these things have been, there's been rumblings for a couple of weeks about the takeover happening. And you can only say that, you know, discussions, I think, are at an advanced stage with Paul Cook. And, you know, it's clearly something happening there. And regardless of what happened in the last two games, he was going to go. So, you know, I think from an Ipswich point of view, it seems like a change was needed because they, again, just like last season, they started well, but have tailed off. And, you know, I don't know the ins and outs, but it just seems like a clash of personalities. I think him and the owner clearly don't get on, because you know better than anyone what Lambert's like, Dave. Like, he's a volatile character. So, you know, you can only assume that they've not seen eye to eye, but I can only imagine the payoff that Ipswich would have had to pay to get rid of him, because, you know, surely a change would have been made before now.
Yeah, well, it was all worth it just for that moment during the 3-0 win at Carrow Road, wasn't it, when he got sent off. The laughter going around Carrow Road, that was, given that Norwich were on their way to a promotion anyway.
Well, he deserved that, because I'll always remember when he came back with Aston Villa the first time. And they beat us in the Cup 4-1 and he was given it the big one then.
Yeah,
and ever since then, you know, I just thought, wow, he needs to get his just desserts, and I think he has. I think he's, ever since then, as we know, you know, he's not had the success he achieved at Norwich, and obviously going to Ipswich, he went there because not only did he need the job, but also to give it to Norwich again, and you know, try and keep them up in the Championship at the time and take them back to League One. He had that, all these things in his mind, and it just didn't work out for him in the end, but. You know, the only bad thing now is they'll probably get someone in and go and make the playoffs and win the playoffs. So that's the only bad thing. It was a shame you couldn't stay to the end of the season, but you live and learn.
Well, let's just hope Norwich are in the Premier League anyway. But that's a good point. Yeah. That was League Cup quarterfinal, wasn't it? Benteke was brilliant and they won 4-1. But of course, the pivotal issue there is that Ian Culverhouse was still by his side at that point. Mm-hmm. And I think most Norwich fans now, with the benefit of hindsight, will point to the fact that ever since he's been without the now King's Lynn boss, things haven't gone too well for him. But that is more than enough Ipswich chat, because, of course, Norwich are flying high. And with 13 games of the season remaining, they've already hit 70 points, Connor. And five wins on the spin, it's a really impressive recovery from that little wobble, which is all it was, wasn't it? You know, 2-0 draws and then a defeat at Swansea. But you've got to say fair play to the players and to Daniel Farke for the way they've responded, because this was a really tricky little spell of fixtures, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly that. And they've come through it really, really well, actually. I think we spoke probably about a month ago about 4 potential banana skins, and they've managed to sort of sidestep all of them and done it with real confidence, actually, and real swagger. And that's kind of the thing with this side. I don't think it's as entertaining as the side that won the league 2 years ago, but it's certainly more ruthless and more efficient and deadly. And I think in a strange way, if you kind of had a game between the side that won the league 2 years ago with this team, I think this team would probably come out on top just because of how efficient it is and how defensively solid it is. And maybe in terms of excitement now, that they might not be the best team to watch in terms of free-flowing football, but they win football matches, and that's what they're geared to do, and that bodes well. And it's another clean sheet, and it's just a lot of positivity, considering some people in some quarters had handed the league title to Brentford a few weeks ago. This has been a remarkable response to that, and it goes to show, I think, the quality and the character and mentality as well. And Daniel Farke's got to take a lot of credit for it as well, because it would have been easy to, I think, feed on that panic as a squad and as a group. And we know that he's kind of fairly level-headed, isn't he? He's not particularly high when Norwich are in the situation they're in right now, and he wasn't particularly low when they were getting relegated last year. It's kind of been pretty even for him throughout, so I think that's helped. And they're in a really they're in a position now where it kind of feels, what, 10 clear of third place. It feels like beyond an almighty collapse that they're kind of destined for return to the Premier League now. And it's just about whether they do it as first or second, I think, at this point, because someone worked out on Twitter, I think, the points per game that everyone would need, and everyone else would probably need over 2 points per game to catch Norwich. That's staggering, really. So they're in a really healthy position with 13 games to go. And I think whilst they'll be taking it one game at a time, I think everyone else will look at them and probably say that they're pretty much there now.
Yeah, I mean, Watford or Swansea would have to win 4 and Norwich would have to lose 4 in the last 13. So it is a remarkable position they've got themselves into. And like you say, I probably agree with you. I think they might beat the team of 2018-19. Yesterday was a good example of that. In my video verdict at the Pinken YouTube channel, I gave Grant Hanley my man of the match. I thought Kenny McLean was very good as well. Obviously, Buendia. I think you can probably give Buendia man of the match every time, couldn't you, if you really wanted to, because he's probably the best player on the pitch every time. But this was a game where it was like playing a League One team, wasn't it? They were bombing it forward. I think it was 32 aerial duels won, and Grant Hanley was responsible for 10 of them. So that defensive strength, Sean, just how impressed have you been with the way that Farke has just tweaked things ever so subtly? Obviously with Hanley, but he decided to bring Ben Gibson straight back in yesterday once he was available. And I think all Norwich fans agreed with that, didn't they? Because that just feels like it's the partnership which has the balance and has looked the best.
I think it does. Yeah, absolutely. I prefer it when them two are at the back. I think it makes such a difference having Ben Gibson in this side. He's a slightly different defender to obviously Godfrey was, but he's resilient, he's strong. And you know, between the two of them, I much prefer that partnership to Zimmerman. I think they're good from corners as well. They seem quite good going forward, but aerial duel wise, as you've just mentioned, nobody can beat them in the air. They're overpowering and dominant in the air. So, you know, I think it makes such a difference when he's in the side, and I think Kroll must feel it too, because you know we don't look like conceding.
Yeah, I mean, if Zimmerman was coming in for Hanley, I wouldn't be so worried, just because. But when Hanley had to move over to the left, it was fine. It wasn't exactly a disaster, was it? But it just doesn't flow quite as nicely. The other man coming in, Sean, was O'Neill Hernandez. What did you make of his performance? I mean, Todd Cantwell, just a minor calf injury, but Daniel said less than a 50% chance of him being available for Brentford.
It was a little underwhelming, you know, wasn't it? You know, O'Neill, a couple of years ago, even last year, he looked good running at defences. He looked up one of our biggest threats. But it's not the same O'Neill Hernandez. And I wonder if there's something going on there with him, because he just he doesn't look quite at it. I mean, he huffed and he puffed and he tried, but it's just not the O'Neill end product that we've seen. I think obviously he needs a few more goals in his game, just kind of run at defenders and have a go at that, you know, at the keeper. But it's not looked like the O'Neill that we saw 2 years ago and even last season.
Yeah, I mean, since we recorded the last pod, of course, there was the midweek game as well, the 3-1 win at Birmingham. And Connor Hernandez made a decent impact off the bench in that one, didn't he? So I think he'd earned his place. I did him as our player watch. You can read that at pinkham.com, which is a bit more in-depth on his performance. But I feel like he's had enough game time now to not really be able to keep pointing to the injury and stuff. I know it takes a while, but I feel like he probably should be in a bit of a better rhythm than he is at the moment. I did feel sorry for him that Buendia skied that chance, because he'd done well to set that up, hadn't he? And that would have been his first assist of the season. But equally, that header from the Max Aarons cross. I mean, I know O'Neill's not a man that you're pinning your hopes on in the air, but that it almost looked like a sort of 8-year-old closing his eyes, scared of the ball, didn't it?
Yeah, it looked like me going for a header, to be completely honest, which everyone used to think I was good at because I'm tall, and it was just like, it's not the case. But yeah, I think absolutely spot on in terms of Hernandez. And the thing is, whenever he gets the ball in certain situations, he looks dangerous. He looks like he's threatening to do something. It's just that final product, that final decision, that final bit of quality that he needs to add to his game that maybe has been a criticism that you could level at him, I think, throughout his Norwich career. And that was lacking. There was a one-on-one situation as well, wasn't there, where he looked to sort of chip the keeper and got that wrong. And you just asked for a bit more ruthlessness, a bit more quality. But he certainly offers Norwich a different dynamic. And like you say, against Birmingham, we saw that he injected a bit of energy, a bit of forward thrust, a bit of, a direct running, I guess, to the side that helped unlock Birmingham for the second goal at a time where Norwich were kind of drifting in and out of the game. So he clearly can have an impact at this level. You just want to see more from him and a bit more consistency and a bit more quality in terms of his final action. And then, if you can extract that out of him, which, to be fair, there were some cases towards the back end of the Championship season last time, and injury sort of stifled him in the Premier League, but even again to a similar extent, where we were beginning to see a bit more in terms of that, and now again this injury's kind of thrown it away, and he's starting from the foundation again. So, yeah, it feels harsh, like you say, to criticise him too much because of the time he's had out, but I think you're right, Dave, in terms of now he's had a sizable amount of game time where you can probably judge him pretty fairly and pretty in the round. So I think he will want a step up in terms of his productivity, because I think you're right. If it's Campwell, for example, that took up some of the positions he took up yesterday, I think the scoreline is probably a lot more convincing than it was.
Yeah, and Campwell has obviously been playing very well. Let me put you both on the spot and briefly turn our attention to Brentford just on this issue. I think Daniel will probably stick with Hernandez because he'll feel that he wasn't that far off hitting his rhythm and that another start will do him good. Or if Campwell is unavailable, would you be looking to bring in Kieran Dowell or Poyeta on that left side? Sean, what would you prefer to be if Todd's not involved?
I'd give O'Neill another chance. You know, I think as you said before, you know, he has a run of games, but with Campbell not quite fully fit yet, give O'Neill another chance. You know, we're on a winning run. You know, if we can keep an unchanged team, I think that would suit for the rhythm. And, you know, I think O'Neill is one of those players. He's frustrating to watch, but you just know that there could be a bit of magic with him. He's unpredictable.
Yeah.
He could have the game of his life and score two goals. And, you know, it's everyone's all smiles. But then it could also be another game where you think, oh, what's he doing that for? He's very frustrating. And maybe he's one of those players that needs a bit of sort of backing from the fans, you know. And if he had fans on his back, would that encourage him to play better? I don't know. So, you know, give him another chance, and fingers crossed, he'll put in a good performance.
And Connor,
yeah, I think I'd agree. Just based on the way I see the game going, I think Brentford are going to look to attack Norwich. I think there will be space to gallop into him behind, and I think he's going to be a pretty useful asset to have in that game. So I would stick with Nandez from the off, and then I guess if you need to look at maybe Shemi Placetta or Kieran Dowell as a substitute after 65 minutes if things haven't quite transpired in the way that you'd hope. But we know Daniel Farke likes momentum and consistency, and if Todd's not available, I think it will be an unchanged team, if I'm completely honest.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see if Dowell could take on the sort of Cantwell role in terms of him and Wendy are almost being, you know, number 10s in inverted commas, but playing out wide. And then the actual central player, which is Vrančić at the moment and has often been Steepman, ends up being the person that sort of knits it all together and isn't necessarily the playmaker all of the time. So that's going to be an interesting issue. But I think the one big thing, as with a lot of the players in the squad who are from the previous title-winning squad, fans want O'Neill to find it, don't they? They'd love to see him spank one in the next couple of weeks or you know, play a big part because, you know, 8 goals and 9 assists in 2018-19, he was a big part of all that. From the left to the right, and Emi Buendia, we just can't stop talking about him at the moment, really, can you? 10th assist of the season to go with 9 goals. He's going to end up in double figures for both, isn't he? I'm sure he'll get another goal between now and then. So already we can say he's had an exceptional individual season with 13 games to go. So who knows what he can achieve. But I know there's a lot of debate around, you know, is he Norwich's best ever player? Where do you stand on that, Sean? Because I think it's two sort of slightly different things. I think technically, just in terms of pure ability, he is probably up there as one of those. But for me, I don't see it as being a debate. And because when you talk about Ian Crook and Mark Bowen and Rolf Ott, Chris Sutton, and all those guys, late 80s, early 90s, who actually performed at the top of the English game, Buendia hasn't done that. So until he's done that with Norwich City, I don't see that that's a conversation. But he is a brilliant player, isn't he?
He is a brilliant player. And you know, you're probably right. Technically, there's few better than him. Unfortunately, I never was around for people like Crook and Bowen. But I was Huckabee and Holt, like you, Connor. You know, they were our icons, they were our heroes. So, you know, I think technically Buendia is probably the best. But for me, I would still put people like Huckabee and Holt ahead of Buendia, just as Norwich's greatest ever player. And I don't know if that's me being biased because I guess I got to see them more. But I think if you were to say on quality alone, individual quality, Buendia is still there. And I think if James Maddison stayed a couple more seasons with Norwich, perhaps he could have been in that conversation as well. Obviously, you look at Houlihan as well. As I love Houlihan, but for me, I can't see him beating Huckabee and Holt in my sort of rank. If I said a top sort of three, I think Houlihan would probably be third. But for me, Huckabee and Holt stands above them two. And then between Buendia and Houlihan for third place, because it depends on who you ask, isn't it? You know, they're all great players, and I can't put Buendia ahead of Huckabee and Holt.
They were talismen, weren't they, Holt? Particularly Holt in the way he drove Norwich up through the divisions. But Hux was so good consistently for Norwich. He was you know, the best player for a long time, wasn't he? But this is a debate that will rumble on. There will soon be another person who enters the debate in the next few years, I'm sure. Who knows? Maybe he's already in the squad somewhere, but it's a big enough squad. But just in terms of Buendia at the moment, Connor, you know, he's in the Championship Team of the Week for what, the fourth out of the last 5 game weeks. So he's in a tremendous run of form. But again, to almost give credit to Wickham, they worked so hard, didn't they, that they made Norwich work really hard for these 3 points. And it wasn't until the 87th minute when Eder actually scored the second goal that it was safe.
Yeah, and I watched the first half, and I think if you were sat, it wasn't a game for the neutral anyway, I don't think. But if you were sat watching that, maybe not supporting both sides, you would probably think exactly what I said there, that it was quite dull. It was quite passive for the most part. But you have to give credit to Wickham because they made it that way. They scrapped and they kind of made it tough and difficult. And I think it's kind of emerging that there's two ways to play against Norwich. You either press them really high in the way that Barnsley have in particular, with the risk then of leaving space in behind for someone like Timu Pukki to exploit and to run onto, or you do the reverse of that and you do what Wickham do, which is try and go man for man, don't concede any space and make them and make you, yourself really difficult to play through. And for 45 minutes, they did that exceptionally well. And I think it's a testament to the character and the type of squad that Gareth Ainsworth has built there, because it's crystal clear to see that that they really love playing for him. And you know, a Miracle and Wycombe Wanderers are kind of, they've been aligned in, I think 7 years ago, they're pretty close to going out of League Two, and now they're in the Championship. So there is that narrative around it as well, and that can extract an extra few percent. But in games like that, and we saw it, I felt on Tuesday against Birmingham, it's as the game goes on, quality begins to tell. And it's always more difficult as a side without the ball when you're chasing and you're being asked to sort of retain a defensive shape, because you get more fatigued if you don't have the ball. And if you do, so then gaps start to appear. And that's when Norwich really pick teams off. And that, again, that's kind of what we saw yesterday after the first goal. You think about the chances Norwich had. Hernandez had, well, those two chances really that we've spoken about. Emi Buendia blazed over the bar. So I think it did show in the end the quality that Norwich have, and it was all about not becoming frustrated, and they made sure, I felt, they did that very well. But Wickham made a real game of it for the last 20 minutes or so. We've spoken about the penalty, which perhaps they should have had, but there was a lot of territory they had as well and a lot of pressure they put on. Obviously, they made that five-man substitution, which was ridiculous, and that did sort of go in their favour. So I think Gareth Ainsworth, quietly, if you caught him in a quiet moment yesterday evening, would have felt immensely proud at his side's performance. And that's not to do a disservice, but it's just to the way, how far they've come, and given the respective sides in the division, because he's right, this game was probably a lot closer than maybe people will look at the scoreline and think.
Yeah, a quintuple substitution. I think that's the first time I've seen it in a competitive game. For a reporter, it can be a bit of a nightmare, but they rolled through them quite slowly, unlike some games in pre-season that I've covered, when they'll chuck 10 on and they won't even read them all out. And you're just,
I always think about, can you remember that friendly when Norwich played? I think it was Panathinaikos at Carrow Road, and I felt for the PA announcer, because every time he had to announce a substitution, it was the longest Greek name in the world, and really struggled.
There was one at King's Lynn, a friendly. I think it might have been Pookie's first game. It might have been that one. And Farker handed over for the last half an hour to Matt Gill and the under-23s. And they actually won the game. I think Norwich were losing with the first team players at that point, because it was very early in pre-season. But at that point, they put on a whole new team. And the PA announcer at the Waltz just had no idea what was going on. So we're in the stands, like on the live blog and stuff, trying to make sense of who's come on. And there's, you know, under-18s players that we've never seen play and stuff. So that was good fun. You mentioned neutral viewers there, Connor. But we, of course, know that there's a very high-profile neutral viewer of Norwich games now, in a certain Mr. Guardiola. A heck of a bromance blossoming here, Sean. Farker's got quite a lot of them. We hear it after every game, don't we, that all the managers love him.
I know. It's a cool German, isn't he? I was very shocked to read that the other day. I couldn't quite believe it. But I think there's probably a lot of mutual respect developed there after we beat Man City, obviously, last season. I think I can imagine that they had a glass of wine or a slice of cake, as Daniel likes to say, after the game. So, you know, it's great to see that we've got an ally in Guardiola, and hopefully that might mean if we go up that we can pinch one or two of the younger players on loan or something. But, you know, it's a great story, and hopefully, the you know, we can benefit from that sort of relationship. And it's just nice to see that our manager sort of gets on with these big names. And I think hopefully it'll help us in the long run.
Yeah, he's liked and respected. And as everyone associated with Norwich knows, he's just a nice guy, isn't he? He's a good chap.
Yeah.
I suppose it's almost killing them with kindness a little bit in footballing terms, isn't it? Rather than being the sort of old school, aggressive, gruff sort of manager, he just, you know, kills them with that smile, really. But yeah, I mean, in terms of Manchester City, obviously Angus Gunn was on loan that while Guardiola's been in charge, and Patrick Roberts didn't work out. But, you know, if Farker has befriended Guardiola, and of course he knows Thomas Tuchel very well, then there's a decent chance, and he's there is a bit of a bromance with Mourinho as well, isn't there, in terms of...
That's it, and Klopp as well, because of the German connection, Dortmund connection. So, you know, he's doing all right, actually. He's doing the round, isn't he?
He is. Well, if that pays off in Norwich, then we'll have to see. That would be really interesting. But
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yes, so the man that we haven't really spoken about yet, but of course is the reason for this hot streak, really. 7 goals in 5 games for Teemu Pukki, up to joint 15th in the club's all-time top scorers now. And he only needs... So he's on 18 for the season. If he gets another... How many does he need? 7 goals, he would move up to level 10th in the all-time rankings. So that would take him to 25 for the season, which with the way he's playing at the moment, Connor, seems, okay, a deflected goal, but it, you know, it's about the movement, isn't it? But another 7 goals for Pukki, the way he's playing at the moment, seems very possible, doesn't it?
Yeah, in what, 13 games? So it's not beyond the realms at all, really, of possibility. And he's exceptionally good. It's not just his finishing, it's the movement. And what he does really well is he plays on the edge of a game, and you can kind of in your mind think, well, they haven't really got Pukki involved yet. And then bam, there's the movement, there's the pass, and he's in. And it's those movements over 5-10 yards that make him so difficult to defend against. Because as I said, if you offer him the space, as a defensive side, he can really hurt you in behind. But equally, if you do play, as Wickham did yesterday, a fairly low block and look to frustrate you, then it's those clever little movements like he created for the goal where he just peels off a defender and then makes the cutback fairly simple for Emi Buendia. And it's those kind of movements that are so difficult to defend against as well. So I think for opposition defences at the moment, it's not what does Teemu Pukki do, it's we know what Teemu Pukki does. It's how do we stop him? And that's what makes him so good at this level. And that's why Daniel Farker is praises him the way he does. And yeah, in terms of his finishing, it's always been top level. And yeah, it was a deflected goal yesterday, but that's kind of epitomizes where he is in terms of confidence, doesn't it? Because when you're a striker and you're in the run of form that he's in, suddenly everything you hit ends up in the back of the net, regardless of how cleanly or how well you strike it. And then, you know, you go back to a month ago where he couldn't score for love nor money, and everything he was hitting wasn't hitting the target. So it's kind of the cycle of a striker, isn't it? But there's a saying, isn't there, that form is temporary and class is permanent, and that kind of feels like that's the case with him. And because there was obviously that nice chat he did, I think it was with you, Dave, wasn't it, after a game where he said he'd been doing... Oh, Daniel Farker said he'd been doing training practice and working on his finishing, and maybe that little bit of self-doubt had begun to creep into his game. But yeah, I mean, he said before the game to Sky Sports that he felt like he was back in top gear, I think he said, and I think we're certainly seeing that now, because when he does and when he is flying like this, he's an exceptional player to watch. And what makes the statistics about him entering the top 15 so special, it's not necessarily the goals that he's done it, it's the amount of games that he's done it in, and it's his goals per game as well, which I think someone tweeted yesterday would put him in the top 5. I think it was our colleague Pete Raven said it would put him in the top 5 in terms of goals per game, which is absolutely insane, really. So yeah, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that we're watching a player become a Norwich City legend. And he's up there with some real greats now. And that's a testament to his first, what, two and a bit years as a Norwich City player. It's not bad going at all.
It's not. And Sean, that he's recovered from that bit in the middle of the season where it was at Blackburn, wasn't it? He scored his 50th goal on the day that he got his 100th appearance. And then he went for, I think, 8 games without a goal in open play, had a little bit of an injury in the mix in December as well, hadn't he? That he bounced back from that is impressive, given that he had a tough season last year as well at points. But I guess what he's also got to play for is Finland at the Euros this summer. He wants to be firing for that, doesn't he?
Well, that's exactly it, isn't it? I can only echo what Connor just said. You know, he epitomises everything Norwich City at the moment, and he can be having a bad game. And I don't think he was even at his best yesterday, but he still scored. And when you're a striker and you're scoring goals, that's the best feeling in the world. And that's what he keeps doing. I think Wickham did a very good job at sort of playing away that we couldn't put balls through to him. And it was a deflected goal, but, you know, he won't mind that at all. And it's a lot. The only concern, as you say, Dave, is that there is obviously Finland in the summer. He's not going to get a long break. And, you know, if we do go up again, you know, he needs a rest. He needs a break. He needs to be fit and firing because, you know, as we saw last season, he started well and it just tailed off because I think Norwich didn't have another option. And we just expected too much of him. We thought, well, if Pukki doesn't score, then we won't win. So, you know, as long as we give him the proper rest this summer and we look after him and even this year, you know, to take him, I think Daniel tried to obviously took him off early again before the end. Just try and look after Timo. And if the game's won, take him off or, you know, now that it's good for Ida to come on and score as well. I think it was his first goal since September. So it was nice to have him fit and firing because, you know, it'll be good for Pukki to have a rest every now and again and just to take the pressure off because we need him. He's our main man. And yeah, we are seeing a living legend. And he will break the records. And if we can keep hold of him, I think he's 30, 31 now?
Yeah.
You know, he will be a Norwich City great, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And so let's just wrap the Wickham game there then, Connor, on that goal from Adam Ida, who's had a weird old season, really, isn't he? You know, the injury while he was away with Ireland, the false positive coronavirus test. Then he actually got coronavirus in January. He signed his new contract before Christmas and things like that, didn't he? But it was actually the red card in injury time against Wickham as well, wasn't it? Which kind of knocked him off course a little bit. But because before all that happened, he was progressing pretty nicely, wasn't he? So a real nice confidence boost for him at a good time. And I did want to say as well, actually, that Lucas Rupp came on alongside him, didn't he? And it was a lovely pass from Rupp, who had, of course, set up Ollie Skip's goal, the late goal at Birmingham midweek. Lovely pass from Rupp through to Ida, which won the corner from which they then scored.
Yeah, but yeah, I think it's worth mentioning Rupp actually before I go on to Ida, because what he's added in the last two games is some real energy when Norwich have needed it. And he's kind of just allowed, because the way Norwich play, it does sap energy out of particularly midfield players. And you just need that option sometimes who can just progress a ball forward up the pitch and relieve pressure. And he did that so well at a time where Wickham were really beginning to put crosses in and put crosses under Tim Krul and win set pieces, long throws as well. So it was beginning to get a little bit relentless. And then he comes on and just drives them forward up the pitch. And he did that again, like you say, against Birmingham, which is good to see. And kind of looks like he's getting back to, if not the level or the consistency, certainly some bursts of what we saw early on in the season, which was why he was so praised. On to Adam Ida, who, yeah, I think it has been a difficult year. And someone at the club said, I think just before Christmas, that they felt he was on the cusp of really breaking through. And at the time, I was kind of sat there thinking, well, I'm not really sure, because the start of the season was a bit disjointed. I didn't feel we really saw the best of him. But based on the last few cameos and obviously the goal yesterday, I think we're really beginning to see him step forward and emerge and maybe become a sort of credible alternative for Timo Pukki, because he does offer drive and physicality sometimes as well. And clearly the materials are there. It's just about sculpting them. And if he can continue with his level of performance that we've seen in the cameos, I mean, there was a stage early on in the season where he was sort of ahead of Jordan Hugill in Farkas. Yeah. Points where Norwich needed a change of attacking sort of emphasis, and it would be Adam Ida that Daniel Farke turned to rather than Jordan Hugill. And if he can get himself into that position again, then that would be a really positive end to the season. And chipping in with goals here and there is what Norwich City need from their strikers, because although we've just spoken in glowing terms about Timo Pukki, you do need other players to chip in with the goals just to relieve the pressure off him a little bit. And that's how you keep him fresh, I think. And, you know, Sean touched upon that sort of barren spell in the Premier League was because no one else was really contributing with the goals, and there was so much pressure and so much spotlight on him. So if you can share that load around and score goals throughout your team, as Norwich have done pretty well this year, then that bodes well for how successful you're going to be. But for him, he just needs a run now, doesn't he? You feel towards the end of the season where some really positive substitute appearances, some goals like we saw yesterday, and that will really give him the boost, I think, going into pre-season and next season to end what has been a pretty disjointed and difficult season for him at points as well.
Well, I think I've cracked Daniel Farker's master plan while you guys have been talking there. Because to go back on Sean's point about Pukki potentially not getting much rest in the summer because he's going to play for Finland and things like that. When I spoke to Tim Krul after the Rotherham game, in one of his quotes, he said, you know, we don't want to be going to Barnsley on the last day of the season and needing something because we know how difficult that could be. But if you look at the run of fixtures, that final five games is actually looking, you certainly don't want to be worrying too much at that point. Bournemouth, Watford, Reading, Barnsley, all in the last five. But between, you know, we're now going to turn our attentions to this big game on Wednesday night, which I'm really looking forward to, or Wednesday evening, 5:30 kickoff for some reason for Sky against Brentford. But after that, it's teams who are all in mid-table or in the relegation battle. Luton, Sheffield Wednesday, Forest, Blackburn, Preston, Huddersfield, Derby, all in a row. Sure, they have got the chance. I know this is a ridiculous, I am allowing myself to get carried away here. They have got the opportunity to get this done early because Connor made a good point a few weeks ago in the pod that really at the moment you'd probably rather be playing a mid-table team you don't have a lot to fight for than a team who are deep in the relegation battle, and they're the teams that they've mostly just got out of the way.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. You want to play teams as the famous saying goes that are on the beach. You know, you want to play teams that haven't got anything to play for and are just there, just turning up. And if we can get it done early, you know, obviously Brentford, massive game, we'll get onto that. You know, other than that, as you just say, they're all on, who we got? We've got Sheffield Wednesday after that, Nottingham Forest, Blackburn. You know, they're all teams that we can beat and quite easily. And if we can win the next, after Brentford, win the next three or four after that, well, then it should be done and dusted, shouldn't it? So, or pretty much there. So, you know, it will take a major implosion to mess it up from here. And if we can get it done early, then we can give players like Adam Eder a chance and give Pukki a rest. Like, if we're promoted and up, I don't really want to see Pukki playing, if I'm honest. Like, especially, like, give him a couple of games rest. You know, it would do him the world of good. And not just Pukki, you know, even players like Tim Krul, give as many of them a rest as possible. If we can get it done early, it will make such a difference to us to have those players fit and fresh and give them a proper summer off. And we have the chance. We have the opportunity now. We have the games. If we can get a draw against Brentford and win the next three or four games, we'll be in a fantastic position.
Yeah, we've allowed ourselves to slip into a little bit of a Norwich City utopia there, haven't we? But I guess there's
going to... That's the ideal situation. But as we all know, it's never as easy as it sounds.
Yeah, there will be a blip at some point, won't there? But just to finish with the Brentford game, I am looking forward to, just in terms of a spectacle and in terms of entertainment, because it should be two good teams going at it, playing attacking football. No one's going to be parking the bus. Although we know that both teams are pretty solid defensively as well. But it's a wonderful situation, isn't it, Connor, to go into this match against your main promotion, hopefully title rivals, 7 points clear of them. Before you even think about being 10 points clear of Watford and 11 clear of Swansea, it almost feels like Norwich can go into this one without a great deal of pressure. Like, if you think back to the Alex Neil era and that big Middlesbrough game at the end of the season, which Norwich needed to win to get have any chance of getting into automatics, and then they lost 1-0, didn't they? This game doesn't have anything like that sort of tension on for them, does it?
No, it doesn't. I'm going to sound a bit like Jose Mourinho or insert manager here. When, you know, by saying the onus really is on Brentford to try and win the game, because if Norwich don't, does it eat into the reserve of points they have? Yes. Does it really throw their position out the window? Not particularly. They'd still be 4 points clear and seven clear of third place. That's still a really healthy position to be in. So it is a big game and all the context and first week second. But I mean, if Norwich do win it, it would take something pretty extraordinary to see them fall outside of the top two. So it is a big game, but I would say the onus is going to be on Brentford to try and come to Carrow Road and win and get something. And as we've seen, they've not lost a game there since October, is it? So it's going to be incredibly difficult, particularly given how defensively robust Norwich have been. And as we've said, they're really efficient, so they might not be at their best and can still win 2-0. And that is kind of the danger. I think it's pretty ominous for everyone else in the league at the moment. And what Brentford do have clearly is Ivan Toney. arguably, whatever you want to describe him as the best striker in the league. I don't think Daniel Farke would be too pleased saying that he's ahead of Pukki, but certainly in terms of goals scored, he's been incredible for them. I think that they're probably, if you boil it down to pure attack-based teams, I think they're probably the best in the division. So it is going to be a stern test for Norwich's defence. And yeah, I'm with you, Dave. I think this is going to be a really intriguing, really exciting football match. But ultimately, Norwich are in such a healthy position that if they do lose it, then it wouldn't be the end of the world. Even if they got a draw, that's a pretty decent result considering their circumstances. It keeps kind of the status quo, so to speak, and keeps them in exactly the same position, providing the other sides don't capitalise. So, yeah, I mean, it's big in the grand scheme of things, but in terms of Norwich City, I think they're you'd rather be in their position than Brentford, who are going to have to come to Carrow Road and really chase a win.
Yeah, I really like Tony because he's such an all-round player, isn't he? He's got the size, he's got the pace. He's also got, I think, 9 assists. To add to his 25 goals, I think it is, isn't it? Considering they got him for 5 million up front, rising to 10, and knowing Darren McAntony, the way he drives a hard bargain, probably a few add-ons in there as well. That's a great bit of business. And he looks like a player who's ready for the Premier League. So if Brentford somehow don't end up going up, then I'm sure he'll be at hot property in the summer. But did you both see the goal that Janolt scored for them at the weekend? The brilliant strike. That was an absolute rocket, wasn't it? But they've kept falling behind recently in games, and so they're showing a bit of character. But it's not that long ago that they had taken top spot off Norwich, and I think that just fired up the Farker squad that little bit more. So how much are you looking forward to this game in terms of you think Norwich are really going to be pumped for it?
See, I kind of think it might go the other way. I think it might be a cagey affair with both teams sort of waiting to suss each other out and seeing who's going to make the first move. Norwich don't need to win it. This is the thing. Norwich can take a draw and it will be a great result. I'd be more than happy with a draw on Wednesday. Brentford obviously will. They're going to respect Norwich. They're going to think, we don't want to concede the first goal. I think Pukki has scored the first goal in the last 3 or 4 games, hasn't he? So, you know, I do think Brentford obviously need to come out and go for it, but I can see it being a bit cagey in the first half, and then, you know, as the game opens up, I think both teams will give it a good go. But it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because how do you play it? Do Norwich just set up and play for the draw, or will they, you know, go for it as they have for every other game this season? So, I mean, if you ask me right now, I'd happily take a draw. But we'll just have to see how Daniel sort of sets up, and I assume it'll be an unchanged team, and he'll go for the win as usual. But you know, if he offered it right now, I'd absolutely take the point.
Yeah, as so often with big games, they do. You know, look at Chelsea, Man United on Sunday.
That was a drab affair, wasn't it?
Well, I only had it on in the car, but it didn't sound great. But yeah, so often you are right that these big games, when there's a lot on it, can be that. But I'm just hoping that the fact that Norwich, as I said a little earlier, don't have a load of pressure on them might just mean that they're able to play with enough freedom to get ahead in this one. And then, of course, we know the way that they're playing, because I can't see Norwich setting up to be defensive. I just don't think I don't think that's Farker's way, really. It's about having the defensive steel behind the attacking ability, isn't it? But great stuff, boys. Thank you very much for joining me to look back on that. You can also hear the pod on Future Radio 107.8 FM. They normally put the show out ahead of the midweek game if there is one. But for now, thank you very much for listening. A little reminder as well, the official Norwich City sticker book is still very much available. I finished mine last week, which was a big moment in my lockdown life. So pleased to have that done and dusted. Pinkandshop.co.uk is the place to go if you haven't started yet, or if you're still looking to complete your book. But for now, thank you very much for listening. Look after yourself. Stay safe. We'll have all the build-up for you, the pre-match press conference on Tuesday. And then, of course, we'll be with you at pinkin.com throughout the game on Wednesday evening. Okay, so I'm joined by our head of sport, Chris Lakey, now, who, of course, was covering the Canaries full-time during Glenn Roeder's period in charge. The sad news this week that Glenn passed away at the age of 65. So just wanted to catch up with Chris a little bit on Glenn's time in charge, which, you know, was quite a tumultuous time, wasn't it really, Chris?
Yeah. First off, condolences to his family. It was funny times because Glenn Roeder arrived at Carrow Road as a big name, built largely around what he'd done at West Ham and Newcastle. And you know what? I never thought the Newcastle thing ever left Glenn Roeder. You look at his backroom team. There was Lee Clark, yeah, Paul Stevenson, Adam Sadler, I think it was. And even, if you remember, helping out, and he'd roll up every Thursday's car with his dogs, John Curry, a Geordie who used to be the rugby coach in North Walsham.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, he really did have this sort of, I hesitate to call it a Geordie mafia, but that was, you know, everything was sort of Newcastle-centric with him when he first came. He knew a lot, did Glenn Roeder. He knew a lot of people within the game. Arsene Wenger's name cropped up a lot because he worked with Arsene Wenger, I think, at Arsenal, helping out in between managerial jobs. It wasn't until I just had a little look, by the way, that I realised that Norwich's was his last managerial role.
Yeah.
Which seems remarkable, really.
He had a little spell as a consultant at Stevenage, didn't he?
Sheffield Wednesday was involved as well, yeah, wasn't he? I mean, I remember him as a player. He was a magnificent footballer,
right,
a proper, way ahead of his time, centre-half. Came to Norwich. The overriding impression I have, apart from the sound bites, which we'll probably get into, the players he signed an awful lot of loan players. Sometimes some were so many that they had to sit in the stands and watch the game. But I've just written down a few of the names of the players he signed, and he brought in some very good players. I mean, Ryan Bertrand, he brought him in and then brought him back again for his when he started the following season after he joined the summer of 2008, wasn't it? Chet Evans, who at the time was, you know, red hot. Martin Taylor, who was a centre-half from Birmingham, very good.
Kieran Gibbs.
John Kennedy, who, okay, had it not been for awful injuries, would have been such a good centre-half. But he had terrible bad luck with injuries. Signings included Dejan Stevanovic. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he got sort of ruined by injury, didn't he?
Yeah. He was the only person who put the fear of God into me when we talked. He was a hard-looking man. Sammy Kling and David Bell. And, of course, Wes.
Yeah.
You know, I think the most outstanding thing there. But the sort of, not trying to be the Newcastle analogy here, but the black and white of Glenn Roeder's reign was that he brought in Wes. But the other hero, Darren Huckabee, was, I don't think you can say anything but that he was poorly treated on his exit. You know, I was at Sheffield Wednesday when we all said goodbye to Dion when he retired. Mm. And poor old Hux was in no man's land, didn't know what was happening. In the end, he was told to go. I don't think, yeah, he was told he could go. He was told to go. And that was the shame of it, that his time at Norwich, you know, all managers get sacked because it doesn't always end in anything but tears. The shame of it was his time at Norwich had that black and white, you know, the signing Wes, but the way that Darren Huckabee exited, which, you know, they're so highly held in high regard at Carrow Road by City fans. It just sort of exemplified him, really. And the sound bites. I mean, we know he was, you know, when you listen to him, he was really interesting. You could ask question. Yeah, he was. You could ask him anything about football and he'd have an opinion. It was good as well.
He'd take like a deep breath, wouldn't he, before he answered a question, yeah, quite often, because he, you know, he was a thoughtful chap.
But, you know, sometimes at press conferences, for example, I felt he was happier talking about a general thing about football than he was about Norwich City. Mm. And I still get in my mind that it wasn't a good fit. You know, yeah. I mean, Norwich City was on a downward spiral. And it was only, a year later that we saw the final result of it, really. It was on a downward spiral and he wasn't the right fit. He was much more West Ham, Newcastle, big club than Norwich was at the time. But, you know, to his response at an AGM, I felt a little bit sorry for him when he got slaughtered for this. I don't remember your tenure as England manager, but Glenn Rhoda would have been the sort who'd have stood there or sat there. And a fan in the audience, most of whom were anti-Glenn Rhoda, was criticising his football knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, and he just didn't come out with the right answer. But I think a lot of us would have felt in the back of my mind, that your minds, you'd have said the same thing. You know, who on earth are you to tell me? That was his thing. The Tweedledee and Tweedledum with Chris Martin and Michael Spillane was, you know, a little bit reckless. He probably had a point. I don't know. I think overall, it's just part of the rich history of any football club, isn't it? Overall, I found it as interesting a managerial period as many. I had a back and forth with a former colleague of ours last night about, you know, how would you compare it with other managers? And I said, well, he took over from Peter Grant. And that's probably, no disrespect to Peter Grant, but the actual era was one of the greyest eras. Managerial eras for some time, but Glenn Rhoda's wasn't. You know, it was it was interesting.
Yeah,
it was always something to talk about. It was eventful. Yeah, it's always something to talk about. I mean, it ended poorly. I remember they lost to Charlton in the cup, didn't they? And Charlton were darn awful at the time, and Norwich got beaten by them. They were just above the relegation zone, I think, and poor, very poor. But, you know, I think that he couldn't instill what Paul Lambert eventually did, that wanting to play for Norwich. He couldn't do that, I don't think. Probably just because I don't think he bought into it in the same way that other managers had. And the fact that, you know, a little while later you had Brian Gunn in charge, it was your chalk and cheese. But interesting period.
It was. I mean, we all know it didn't end well, as you say, as often happens with all managers. You know, Nigel Williamson, of course, had a great time at Norwich, but it ended badly, didn't it?
Yeah.
But thankfully, social media can be a horrible time, but I haven't really seen any Norwich fans be bitter or say anything nasty in response to the sad news which broke on Sunday. But, you know, passing away at 65, he obviously had his health challenges with them when he was at West Ham with a brain tumour as well, didn't he? And it's just sad news. So I'm pleased to see that people have sort of focused on the positive notes. Like
absolutely.
And I think it's worth pointing out that when he arrived, they were 4 points adrift at the bottom of the table, weren't they? And they did go on a, you know, they came from 2-0 down to draw 2-2 with Ipswich in his first game. They had a 13-game unbeaten run. And, you know, the first season, he did do the job that he was brought in to do before things went wrong.
The other thing, it makes me wonder, I don't know how much money he was given to spend on permanent transfers. But, you know, he's come from big clubs with a bit of money. I suspect he didn't have that much money to spend. I mean, I think Sibierski cost him an awful lot, or cost Norwich City an awful lot. But I don't know if he ever felt sort of held back, but because he didn't have a decent transfer budget. Had he been able to sign better quality players, I think he was that sort of manager, you know, somebody who wanted to, his levels were higher. And I know that sounds a bit contrary given that what happened to the club and relegation that, but he was probably a little bit better than they expected, I think, but more ambitious. And, you know, we could never match the two together. Rhoda and Norwich could never actually be compatible, I don't think. Very, very sad. And your point about Norwich fans is good. I think it's typical Norwich fans. Very respectful in the most part, 99.9%. Very respectful, as you'd expect, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah, as is always sad to see somebody who did, you know, he was in charge of Norwich for 65 games. They won 20 and drew 15 of those. So he was in charge of the club for the best part of 18 months. So it deserves to be marked properly. And it's good to see that people are being respectful.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for joining me, Chris.
Anytime.
I hope for the listeners that was a worthwhile little reflection on some very sad news which broke at the weekend.
Yes, who's back? Welcome to the new normal. I am your host, Richard Porritt, and each week I'll be joined by Cash Boyle.
Back again. The gang is back. Tell your friends.
And Matt Withers.
Greetings. I'm not going to sing.
Thank goodness. Each Friday, the former New European Podcast Gang will be bringing you the week's news, politics, gags, gaffes, and guests. We will be here to hold your hand as the nation steps out of the COVID darkness, rubs its eyes, blinks, and takes those first tentative steps towards the new normal. Cash, are you excited?
I am absolutely giddy with excitement. I don't think I've ever missed two people more in my life.
Matt, what should the listener do right now?
You should head to wherever you get your podcasts, be that Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. Subscribe to The New Normal, and we will pop into your podcatcher of choice first thing next Friday morning.
Okay, tune in for the podcast premiere next Friday, the 5th of March. It is good to be back.